Pioneering black actor Cicely Tyson passed at the age of 96. We'll pay tribute on this episode of Pop Life.
Digital content on WAER is made possible thanks to California Closets, located in DeWitt. California Closets can help you get organized for the new year with custom storage solutions for the closet, home office, kitchen pantry, and more. Online at californiaclosets.com.
Nominated for an Oscar for her role in the movie Sounder, Cicely Tyson touched the heart of Americans with her dramatic roles that portrayed black life in ways we hadn't seen much on screen in the past. She inspired generations of black actors to believe that roles and images that reached beyond caricatures and stereotypes were possible and attainable. From the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman to her role on the iconic television series Roots, Miss Tyson brought complex characters to life with her skill, talent, and humanity. We'll look back at her career and achievements with media historian Bob Thompson, director of the Blyer Center for Television and Popular Culture. And on this Black History Month episode, I'll also see if I can't get Bob to give us his top five most impactful black television shows in American TV history. Welcome back to Pop Life, Bob Thompson, the pop culture ambassador here at Syracuse University. Bob, boy, timing is pretty wild. So not, you know, just an hour or so after we wrapped up recording our episode on the passing of Cloris Leachman, we get news that the great Cicely Tyson has passed away. So we're going to spend a few minutes talking about Cicely Tyson and what she meant to popular culture. We're going to talk in a context of her career in the context of Black history and Black history in popular culture and television. And then let's go ahead and talk about some of your favorite television or movie moments, programs, the most important or iconic programs in Black history, in television history, in celebration of Black History Month. So welcome back to the show under these circumstances.
Thank you. I can't wait to talk about what really was a remarkable career, Cicely Tyson's.
Yeah, Cicely Tyson, boy, I gotta say, I struggle with coming up with someone who is as iconic and representative of what I would call Black excellence in Hollywood, in filmmaking, in television. I'm struggling with finding someone who is, I can think of those that are sort of equal, but I can't think of anyone that is as iconic as Cicely Tyson. This is a giant of Black history and Black history as it pertains to television and film history. Would you agree or disagree with that?
I would definitely agree. And it spread for a long time. She was 96 upon her passing. She was still working in her 90s, and not just working. She was chewing up the scenery on shows like How to Get Away with Murder. That was a really juicy role that she really inhabited in dramatic ways. You can listen to audio. You don't even have to see the picture, or you could watch her without the sound, and it was still powerful performances. I teach her very early work when she was on a show called East Side, West Side back in the 1963-64 season. Cosby generally gets credit for being the first Black co-star of a drama. We, of course, had comedy and music shows before that, but he's generally given the first as the first Black co-star of a drama. I Spy started in 1965. East Side, West Side was in 1963. And Cicely Tyson was a co-star with George C. Scott, but so was Cosby, a co-star with William Culp in his show. And East Side, West Side, they played social workers. It was shot in New York, and really an extraordinary series. It only lasted one season, but did some remarkable episodes, including one, its most famous, where James Earl Jones made his first screen appearance on that. Cicely Tyson, in that show, of course, wore her hair in a natural style. which in 1963 was actually kind of unusual on television. It was not a comic kind of role that we'd seen on Beulah and Amos and Andy and those kinds of things. It really was a big role. And then she would go on to guest star in the debut episode of none other than I Spy 2 years later.
So, we know that she was sort of discovered by an Ebony magazine photographer. So she got her start as a fashion model and then broke into television. She's also, you know, was famously married to legendary jazz musician Miles Davis. And in fact,
by the way, married by Andrew Young, Atlanta mayor, to Miles Davis, jazz legend, in the home of Bill Cosby.
Wow.
You're She's so... godmother to Lenny Kravitz. She's godmother to, I think, Tyler Perry's son, as well as to Denzel's daughter.
You know, and it speaks to when she passed, the number of, and I don't know how much you're on social media, but the number of people, famous people, not so famous people, who in tribute to her posted photos of themselves with Cicely Tyson, which showed the connection that people had to her, showed how much people wanted to be connected, wanted to touch her, wanted to meet her, wanted to speak with her. I mean, just, it was coming out of the woodworks from everyone from President Barack Obama to Oprah Winfrey to many, many others. I saw folks posting pictures with themselves and Cicely Tyson because she was such a large figure in American television history, and particularly Black television history and movie theater history. She's award-winning. She had 3 Primetime Emmy Awards, 4 Black Reel Awards, 1 Screen Actor Guild Award, 1 a Tony, a Peabody, and received an Honorary Academy Award. She got her start in television in soap operas, I think in The Guiding Light. Do you remember that?
I believe that was her early, one of her early things. And of course, soap operas were doing all kinds of things much earlier than primetime did. Social issues, controversial issues, integrated casts. Soap operas were very much trailblazers in that regard.
Do you think of, let me tell you how I think of Cicely Tyson back in those days, in the 70s at least. And this was back when television special series or special movie was huge, right? She seemed to be queen of the special series special movie. I mean, she wasn't a regular on any, if many, if any, sort of regularly scheduled programs. It was always in these big autobiographies or historical shows. These really big productions that were unique and special to the one-time showing, what we used to call miniseries back in the day, what we call just a series now. But back in the day, they were miniseries. So we look at some of her early stuff. Sounder, back in 1972, story of a family of sharecroppers and their dog Sounder. She was nominated for an Academy Award for that. But then you get to the television stuff, the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman, which was a CBS special on the back in the civil rights era. She played a 110-year-old woman who recounted her life story to a journalist.
Cicely Tyson almost made it to 110.
Yeah, you know?
She was only 14 years short.
And then one of the biggest television, and I don't know if this is going to be on your list when we get to it, one of the biggest television events of my lifetime, for sure. She played in Roots. That's back in 1977. And then there was the Marva Collins story, the West Side Prep School founder. So there's Women of Brewster Place, which was, I believe, produced by Oprah Winfrey.
That's correct. Right.
I think it's downright selfish of you the way you make us worry so much.
Worry about what? I'm fine.
Melanie, anything can happen to you living over here with these people.
What do you mean, these people? They're my people, Mama, and yours too. Or have you forgotten that over in Linden Hills?
It's not what I meant, and you know it. I mean, these streets, this house, it's so shabby and run down.
This is how poor people live.
But you're not poor, Melanie.
No, Mama, you're not poor. You're the one with a husband in real estate with a five-figure income and a house in Linden Hills. All I've got is my unemployment and an overdrawn checking account. This is all I can afford.
You could afford much more if you hadn't dropped out of college.
Yeah, I knew it. I knew you'd get around to that.
So you have these made-for-TV big events when they called for black folk. Boy, people seem to be reaching for Cicely Tyson.
They were, and of course that was both a blessing and a curse. It was a blessing if you were in the 1970s, Louis Gossett Jr., James Earl Jones, Cicely Tyson, or Ben Vereen, you were doing pretty well.
Yeah.
If you were a black actor that wasn't one of those or a handful of others people, you were not doing so well because there were a limited amount of roles and they did tend to go to the kind of go-to people. But there were reasons why she was a go-to person. And you named, I think, four perfect moments in her career, only one of which, by the way, was a movie. It was a theatrically released, and that was Sounder. Mm-hmm. But after she did the co-starring regular role in East Side, West Side, I think the highlights that we point to are certainly autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman, which, by the way, was her, that character of Jane Pittman was so memorable. Ronald Reagan thought that Jane Pittman was a real person.
Yeah, you know what? And I'm not going to laugh at that because she was so connected to that special event that for a long time when I would see a picture of her or see her in something else, I would say, "There goes Miss Jane Pittman." I mean, you know, it was right. It was so connected to her.
And I think there's even a memorial that they did many years ago, a Jane Pittman drinking fountain. Mm-hmm. It may even be in Rochester, down the road a piece from here.
Oh, wow.
But anyway, the idea that role was so compelling that she almost became history. And of course, that one of the final scenes, that excruciatingly long but beautifully acted walk up to the drinking fountain. It's Jane, of course, was born a slave, and the film ends in 1962, I think.
So we walked and walked, round in circles probably, keeping out of the way of rednecks and patterollers who was on the lookout for Freeman. Finally, we were so tired and hungry and not knowing where else to go. I signed on at the dye plantation. I didn't know it was gonna take me 12 long, hard years to get off from that place. Do you know Rox? Ned knew that. They flints for making fire.
And then you mentioned Roots. Not only was she in what at the time was the highest rated television show of all time, including Super Bowl. That's changed considerably since then. But at the time was the highest rated show of all time. She's not only in it, she opens that miniseries. Mm-hmm. She is giving birth to Kunta Kinte as that miniseries begins. And in the first episode, which is where she is featured, once again, it's just such a memorable role. In that two-hour first episode, she's maybe on screen, I don't know, 9 minutes, 10 minutes, but it's some of the most memorable part of that miniseries.
Yeah, she's played a variety of different roles, you know, which I appreciate about her talent. 1997, she co-starred in Hoodlum, which was she was actually head of a crime syndicate in Harlem, New York, starred Lawrence Fishburne. You know, it just, you know, just great variety in what she did. She was up there to me, and you listed a lot of folks that were getting the majority, the lion's share of the work back then. But she was up there with me with Sidney Poitier, Harry Belafonte, Ruby DiAnassi Davis. I mean, this was the creme de la creme of black actors in Hollywood.
Yeah, I would say she very, very much had a a entry card that got her into that club.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one other time we talked about her not that long ago, which is not part of her work that gets mentioned very much, but in 1997, she played the leading role in Mrs. Scrooge. I'm sorry, right. Ms. Scrooge, a retelling of the Christmas Carol with a woman as Scrooge.
Yeah, we talked about that not this past holiday season program, but the one before.
I think right. I called her my second favorite Scrooge. I can't remember who I put as my first.
So we're reminiscing and going back in history, talking about Cicely Tyson. It is February. It's Black History Month. Man, I'm really interested in hearing from you what your favorite, either your favorite or you think the most impactful Black television programs in history have been.
Well, this is a tough but fun challenge.
And I should mention for those listening too, we have not talked about this.
No, we haven't, and I can't wait to hear what yours are. So what are we going to do? Leave this at five?
No, you can list as many as you want, and I just want to hear from you. So I didn't make a list.
Okay, well, I'm just thinking right off the top of my head of, first of all, ones that I thought were really fun that I really enjoyed, which includes the likes of Sister Sister, Moesha, Girlfriends, those kinds of really fun programs, which I think get underrated because they were sitcoms. Mm-hmm. And even today, Blackish, I think, is a really important show. It's done some really important episodes. The Corner, Dear White People, Under One Roof, Power, Soul Food, Flip Wilson Show. This is just free associating. Oh, Martin, Fresh mm-hmm. Prince. Larry Wilmore's The Nightly Show, which didn't last very long, but I think was really important. But I decided to put this down to the big five in my...
Now what's your criteria? Are these personal favorites or are these... historically, the most impactful.
Impact, importance, and artistry on the grandest, most pretentious scale, I guess.
Okay.
So in no particular order, but I'm going to save number one to last. Atlanta, you knew that was going to be on my list. That's on my list of one of the best shows ever. Forget it.
Now, why is that?
Its ability to every episode, and there have not been that many, but every episode is an entity unto itself, and it is brilliantly done. Comedy and horror and social commentary and just the cheeky things it pulls. Casting Justin Bieber with a Black actor with no explanation whatsoever was just such an Atlanta move. That Michael Jackson-inspired piano thing is one of the freakiest but most wonderful thing I've ever seen on television. The Juneteenth episode, which mm-hmm. always makes me, as a white person who likes Black TV, very, very uncomfortable. The BET episode, which is, I guess, called BAN. Anyway, it's every episode of that was a real masterpiece.
I will say this about the show before you move on. It is unlike many other shows. It is the kind of show that in one episode, it could bring you to gut busting laugh, or almost bringing you to tears.
Oh, yeah, that's the same episode, the same scene. Sometimes.
Yes.
Right. The barbershop episode. I forgot about the...
Love that. That's my favorite because I can relate. I personally relate to that.
Yeah. Anyway, so that is, I think that's among the greatest shows ever made in any category. I'm going to include on the list the Nat King Cole Show. Now, that's okay. A little different. That's obviously a lot different than Atlanta. But this was NBC 1956-57.
That's groundbreaking.
NBC gave it a lot of chances, but they could not get a national advertiser for reasons that were pure and simple, racist reasons, especially among the Southern affiliates. But the way he started out as a 15-minute show, and it got expanded to a half hour, but it was so elegantly produced. Mm-hmm. And the guests that he would get, the episode I show in class is a half-hour-long episode where it's just he and Belafonte. They do the entire episode together. and they do medleys, they tell each other's biographies through song. It was really, really a wonderful show, and it was a voice crying in the wilderness, because before Nat King Cole's show, we had Amos and Andy and Beulah, which, by the way, were staffed with incredibly gifted comic actors, but they had their issues of representation. And after Nat King Cole, there was not much of anything until we got into the sitcoms of Norman Lear, the Jeffersons and All in the Family and all of those kinds of shows, with the couple of exceptions occasionally of things like I Spy and East Side, West Side. Nat King Cole's show was really it broke ground, but ground that wouldn't in fact then be grown upon for some time. And then while we're talking about variety shows, Chappelle's show, I think, has got to be really high on one of those lists. Chappelle's got some issues and all that kind of thing, but that show, again, didn't last very long. 3 seasons, the third of which was abbreviated.
That was by choice. So it's not like it didn't last long because it didn't do well. It didn't last long because he became uncomfortable with the arrangement and the kind of material he was putting out, or at least in context of the production and who's surrounding the show.
Right.
But he is a truly brilliant comedian. I would put that show on my list any day.
And then, I remembered one I didn't put on my list, Boondocks. Let's not underestimate that little show. But my other one on, I've got two more on my top five, Insecure, mm-hmm. Issa Rae. That's co-created by Larry Wilmore. He manages to slip into these things where you least expect him. I think that's another show where the development of that character, that voice, it's gentle and kindness at the same time, hysterically funny, is really, I show the pilot of that in my TV history class, though you could show any episode. Mm-hmm.
What I appreciate about Insecure is, unlike, going further back into the historical archives, is that it is written and produced by a Black woman, written, produced, and starred by a Black woman. So you get a unique perspective. You get a perspective that is one that the creator intends to be on screen and represents, a certain viewpoint that we may not get with white writers, with white producers, with a male producer trying to produce a show with a female perspective. So it is uniquely represented on screen as intended by the creator.
I've been here 5 years and they think I'm the token with all the answers.
It's just on fleek. Issa, what's on fleek?
I don't know what that means. I know what that shit means.
But being aggressively passive is what I do best. I used to keep a journal to vent. Now I just write raps.
Go, shawty. It's my birthday. But no one cares because I'm not having a party. Because I'm feeling sorry for myself.
Yeah, it is definitely an auteur creation, she being the auteur.
Yes.
But my number one, and I feel strongly about this, and it's one that I think a lot of people, if you're not old enough, would not remember, was a show called Soul! Exclamation point. Not Soul Train, just Soul. And this played on WNET, the PBS hadn't quite developed or was just starting. Played from 1968 to 73. And it also played on other PBS stations as that network was developing. I was in Chicago, and it must have been playing on my PBS station, how I saw it.
I'm Ellis Hayes, this one. Welcome to Soul.
James Baldwin. Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Stevie Wonder, Nikki Giovanni.
Harry Belafonte.
Al Green.
Yo, this is every day.
Can you imagine what Soul would have been like for a 20-year run?
Los Angeles, Detroit, Newark, cities across the country were erupting.
There were so few positive African American images on television.
We needed to reimagine ourselves on this American landscape.
Got any ideas, fellas?
Live and in color,
from New York City, Soul.
I'm Ellis Hayes, the producer of Soul, and we are happy to have you with us this evening.
This was really an extraordinary phenomenon.
I've never heard of this.
Ellis Hayeslip, a gay black man, was the host of it, and a guy that knew everybody in the art scene. And this was made for black audiences by black producers, hosted by a black man, and featuring black guests. Stevie Wonder, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Ashford and Simpson, these at early parts of their career. Al Green, Gladys Knight, the usual gang you would expect, but also poets. And this was the late 60s, early 70s, so some of this really, you know, experimental poetry. Farrakhan, Jesse Jackson, Belafonte, and Sidney Poitier sat down after they'd done Buck and the Preacher, that movie, and just had a conversation for the entire episode. Kathleen Cleaver, again, poets all over the place. There has never been anything like it on television before. I suspect there never will be on that kind of, you know, wide distribution, though certainly we could see that in streaming. It was really important, and I bring it up now because in a couple of weeks on, February 22nd, Ellis Hayeslip, the host's niece, Melissa Hayeslip, has in fact made a documentary called Mr. Soul, all about this. I'm in it for a couple of seconds twice. She did a debut of it here in one of my classes a while back. And it's going to play on Independent Lens, that PBS show. Mm-hmm. So it'll be, I think it's Monday, February 22nd.
Oh, great.
You'll get a chance to see what a really special show that was.
And we get to see the great Bob Thompson on television.
Yeah, well, you don't blink your eyes because I'm not on there very long. But then again, look at the good company I'm keeping. I don't deserve to be on there very long. Now, well, what about your list?
Well, you know, I didn't set out to create a list, but I do have a few things in mind. And mine isn't going to be based on impact. It's probably going to be based on personal resonance, you know, what impacted me in my life. And I go back to, earliest is a show that I think about often, and I have to go back and watch some episodes if I can with a 56-year-old's perspective, because I watched this as a child. You remember the show Room 222?
Oh, do I ever? Yes.
Well, first of all, I had a crush on several of the women on that show, but it also, you know, it resonated with me because it dealt with, you know, school children, high school. And I wasn't yet in high school, but, you know, it was the kind of show that, first of all, we were not, at least what I was able to access, you know, growing up in Baltimore, I think we had three channels. And so, you know, we didn't often get to see black people on screen. So having this majority black cast on screen in, you know, doing some serious content, it really resonated with me. And it's a show I think about all the time. I love that show. What did you think of it?
I did too. You should come up to my office sometime and we'll put a couple of those on. Because for one thing, you I'm sure remember, this was the Friday night lineup that started with the Brady Bunch, followed by the Partridge Family, and then Room 222 came on afterwards. And oddly enough, that was kind of a nice lead-in, although it was Room 222 and the Brady Bunch are very, very different kinds of things. I, too, will confess, since you did, that I had a couple of crushes on some cast members of that show as well. And they did some really, really interesting episodes. The one I show, again, in my class, it's a Romeo and Juliet retelling. Mm-hmm. But it's about this guy and this high school boy and high school girl who are in love. And you would expect, okay, in the 1970s, this is going to be one of them's black and one of them's white, and we're going to go through the whole thing. But no, Room 222 was way hipper than that. It was about a wealthy, high-class light skin, I think the woman, black woman, and the kid or the boy was like a scholarship kid or whatever. And there was this big Capulet Montague thing going on about class in this black community. And, you know, I know that's stopped the presses, that news, but this was network television coming off the Partridge Family that had aired right before it. That was pretty cool. By the way, the Partridge Family did an episode that Richard Pryor was a guest star in, where Danny Bonaducci joins the equivalent of the Black Panthers to get mom and the band out of trouble because they've gone to the wrong venue. I'm not making any of this up.
I know. I watched it. Well, you know, that leads me to my next. It's funny you mentioned that. Very short-lived show, I think just one season. It's a show that I am appreciating from a historical perspective because I was probably too young to really understand a lot of the skits and the comedy that went on during that show. But in retrospect, I just think was a show way ahead of its time. And that is the Richard Pryor show, the variety show that he tried to launch.
I'm ashamed that wasn't on my list because I didn't think of it. Well, it only went four episodes. Yeah, and then he had enough of dealing with the network. It's amazing it went as long as it did. It's amazing the network ever thought they could put a Richard Pryor show on.
And these are the kind of sketches that are being done or were being done on the Chappelle show.
What in the hell was you doing with him? Your Honor, it's obviously a case of mass hypnosis. Woman has transferred to the whole community like a virus. By the next thing you know, I'll be saying I was with her along about 11:30. Why, if this is allowed to continue, and this Negro—I
mean, this was the Chappelle Show long before the Chappelle Show. You know, I think of where. I think Richard Pryor was actually president of the United States and there was a press conference and you have Roberta Davies from Jet Magazine asking questions. I mean, it was black sketch comedy long before the Chappelle Show and it was outstanding. And I think we as a culture were robbed of the potential.
That particular sketch, of course, is the most famous. And I remember Roberta Davies, who he gave great deference to. And then there was another more militant guy who asks a question and he identifies himself and says, Assalamu alaikum. And Richard Pryor, or the President Pryor, just instinctively goes, Alaikum salam.
Yeah.
Get this back to, I mean, this would get who knows if that planted the birther seed into whatever. And you know who else is in that sketch but does not get a talking a speaking role? Robin Williams was on.
Oh wow!
Show.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You see him in that sketch, but even more than I agree, he was the Chappelle of his time. But that show didn't just do comedy; they did a really quite touching romantic sketch. A guy has come back he's in the army or something. He's come back from the war and it's, I don't know if it's 20s or 30s, whatever it is. It's kind of a fairly extended romantic comedy. That show messed with all kinds of different generic things. And it's amazing how much they got done in a mere four episodes.
Yeah. Yes. You know, again, Richard Pryor is just, you celebrate and you mourn in the same breath with Richard Pryor, but absolutely loved him. I think he was a brilliant comedian and I love that show and I miss the possibilities of what that could have been in, you know, several seasons. And then staying on that same theme, and I don't know why all this stuff is popping in my head because, I mean, I do like a good drama and I do like a good comedy. You know, a situation comedy. I think of the Jeffersons as one of my all-time favorite shows. Good Times, most of Good Times, one of my favorite shows. But the other that I would put on the top of my list because I found it to be groundbreaking, again, is In Living Color. with the Wayans. Again, sketch comedy, just hilarious, hilarious characters. These are characters that are still active in the minds of me and my family when we're, you know, goofing around in the house. And it was groundbreaking in that, I think other than the Richard Pryor show, was that the only other real sketch comedy show that was, you know, similar to the Smothers Brothers and all that stuff that was produced by African-Americans?
Well, Flip Wilson did.
Yeah, Flip Wilson. You got to go back further.
Flip Wilson had a lot of writers that weren't black, but Flip Wilson had a piece of that show. He owned part of it, which was actually quite groundbreaking at the time. But In Living Color was, much, much more, you know, that whole family. And I love your list because that's another one. Homie the Clown is one of my favorite comic characters of all time.
You could slip on a banana peel and fall on your butt!
Fall down, bust my skull open, have my blood and brains ooze out on the carpet so you can get a couple of cheap laughs, huh? I don't think so. Homie, don't play that.
Then, of course, they had Homeboy Shopping Network, which Cosby absolutely hated. Mm-hmm. He thought that was the epitome of all that's wrong. And when you think about it, there were two approaches to black comedy on network television back then. There was the Cosby Show type, and there was the In Living Color type, and they took out very different real estate.
Yeah.
I remember a Living Color where they had Michael Jackson, Mr. Potato Head. Michael Jackson had not passed yet. And they had all these different noses you could put on and all this stuff. And then they said, but just wait. Take ear number 6 and mole number 7, use this potato peeler, and you have his sister, Janet. It was irreverent. It could be tasteless at times, but it was so hysterical. They did a moment in black history, like they would have those black history moments that CBS would do, and it was all about the fact that, in fact, 4 people had gone to the moon with Apollo 11. One stayed orbiting around and 3 landed on the moon. And then they found out they only had enough fuel to get 2 of them back. So they left this other poor guy who I think his name was, I forget what his name was. And of course he's the black astronaut. So They're honoring him as the first black man on the moon who's actually still there because they didn't have enough fuel to bring him back.
You know, I don't know if this launched his career, but this is the first show where I discovered Jim Carrey.
He did a show before that called The Duck Factory by MTM Company, who had made Mary Tyler Moore. And it was about it was like the Mary Tyler Moore show in an animation studio. They cast him as the straight man. All the rest of the people in the cast were the funny folks. And Jim Carrey was in the kind of Mary role, the whatever. So they had discovered Jim Carrey and they, you know, had him being the smart guy. Whereas In Living Color knew what to do with Jim Carrey.
Yeah. So that's my list. And I would add to it Atlanta as well. So those are some great shows. You know what I'm surprised about your list is you go a lot more contemporary than I would have than I would have expected.
Well, part of it is that you don't have any choice because the further you go back, the further candidates there are because we went through a long and a lot of it was my childhood of the 60s, Bewitched and Hogan's Heroes and The Flying Nun and all these. You could find occasionally a black character within there, within those things. But even groundbreaking shows like MASH and The Mary Tyler Moore Show. The Mary Tyler Moore Show had Gordy, but how many episodes was Gordy in and how many did he ever get to speak in?
Right.
MASH, the same way. So I think one of the reasons that mine tends to be more contemporary is, number one, television is allowed to be really good now in ways that it couldn't in the network era. But we have got there's so many places now where these shows actually have the opportunity to play. I'd argue that a good percentage of the very best television of the last 15 years could be categorized as black television, however it is we're defining that. But for example, I was going to put The Wire on the list. Is that black television? I don't know whether we'd call it that or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's predominantly black cast. It's not produced or directed by black person. But yeah, I mean, that was a groundbreaking series. I don't know if I would categorize it as such. There's a season where they sort of go away from the streets and do more with the docks and the Greek mafia and all that stuff. But yeah, no, they're outstanding performances by black actors and actresses. So you know, I guess you could argue one hand or not, but. Great
I
stuff.
Didn't include anything from Shonda Rhimes, which I felt a little guilty about in my list. But
yeah, I mean the Shonda Rhimes stuff is probably. I mean, I'm sure it's great stuff. It's just not in my wheelhouse. I can't speak intelligently on it.
I'm not a big fan of this new Bridgerton, which has broken all Netflix's records for its series. But
yeah. There's
Scandal,
a
Scandal. If you got to start somewhere, start with Scandal. That's a sudsy, lathery, soapy lot of fun. If nothing else, watch Cecily Tyson's performances on How to Get Away with Murder. They're worth the price of admission alone.
Okay, Bob, can you hear me? You're breaking up.
I can hear you fine. Yeah, no, you're not breaking up at all.
I know. I mean, I can hear you. This stuff is just not in my. Yeah, you know, I'm a geek. I like...
I got it. You didn't want me to keep talking about that.
Hey, man, Bob Thompson, I appreciate you going down memory lane with me for Black History Month. We'll have to have you back on to talk about some of the newer shows. I know you are a huge fan of Blackish and some of the others, so we'll have to dive into those a little deeper.
I can't wait. If you and I ever get... quarantine somewhere with a library of stuff, we won't have any problem deciding what to watch.
Absolutely not. Thanks again, Bob.
Thank you.
That'll do it for another Pop Life. The show is a production of WAER Syracuse Public Media. Be sure to stalk us wherever you get your podcasts. You can also get caught up on past episodes at waer.org. Our producer is Kevin Kloss. I'm Joe Lee. Thanks for listening.